Good afternoon. I'm Richard Dayu, President and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce, and we're back for yet another series of stories as we do El Paso Prime Time, the new show that is on KTEP. So for those of you who were able to join us in the first show, we covered the first three of the charter amendments, and tonight, or this afternoon, we hope to cover all of the remaining five with former Mayor Joe Wardy. Before we get into that, I do want to remind everyone who's listening that if you missed the first show during which we covered the first three charter amendments, you can go to the website ktep.org and you can pick up by going through their archives and listening to the interview, as you will be able to do as well with this particular episode. I'll remind you again at the end of the show. So without further ado, it is my pleasure again to welcome a dear longtime friend, Mr. Joe Wardy, former Mayor Joe Wardy, who I don't mind bragging for a moment that I was one of the very first people you called when you decided you were going to run for mayor. But unfortunately, because of my role at the time at the beginning with the chamber, I was admonished I couldn't stand up on the stage with you and cheer you on because I was then serving as the chair of the board of the Greater El Paso Chamber. So welcome back, Joe.
Well, thank you for having me, Richard. I'm still remembering we're sitting in the KTEP studios. I remember when we were both walking this campus together.
That's right. As students.
Right.
Who mostly behaved.
Mostly.
As I recall. So there's hope for all of you students out there who think that perhaps your grades aren't high enough. You can accomplish almost anything, right, with a little determination.
And we both had quite a bit more hair.
And it was darker in color, too, as I recall. So without further ado, we're picking up again now on the fourth of the city charter amendments. And this charter language allows the council more flexible voting options and clarifying that certain actions require a majority vote, whether passed by resolution or ordinance. That is a mouthful that is hard for most folks to understand. Would you mind giving us a little bit more of an explanation?
This one the committee didn't get real involved in. We really didn't discuss this, but this is an offshoot of that. Look, our city charter needs a lot of work. I can tell you that up until the last few years, I think the last 10 or 12 years, it's been a document that's pretty antiquated and redundant and much stricter in some ways in state law. There's conflicts within it. Just like what we talked about in the first show about the definitions of council or the definitions of a majority, I think what this item really does is some house cleaning and allows for more flexible voting options, and it clarifies certain actions require a majority, whether it's a resolution or an ordinance. Currently, the city requires that there be certain votes and certain percentage of votes and certain majorities on different kinds of issues. We are wanting as a city to streamline city government, to make it user-friendly. And this is one of the actions with the help of the city manager and his staff. So this has been well thought out to streamline city government and to make it more efficient.
I just had a visual. If this were a TV show that was interactive versus a radio show, we could ask everyone in the audience who would like to streamline city council government and the way it operates to please raise their hand, and we would have unanimity on that purpose, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. I can tell you that it's very difficult to put together a city meeting, and the city attorney has got to be on her toes all the time to make sure that the different votes comply, whether it's a resolution or ordinance or a supermajority or a simple majority. And I think it makes it difficult for the public to understand. I think only the people that are involved in having to deal with city government, you know, architects, engineers, attorneys, probably understand the redundancies of it. But we're trying to make it so that people that come to our community can follow it and the average citizen can understand why this works this way.
By the way, I think for the benefit of our audience, it might be helpful to them to know that it was, in fact, you and I, the collective you and I, you as mayor of the city and the chamber, and our entire entourage of phenomenal volunteers a number of years ago that pushed forward through the community and encouraged our voters to get behind changing our form of government from a strong mayor to a city manager form of government through your leadership.
Well, I'll go on record, Richard. We couldn't have done it without you. You know, it was there was three things that we did. We put on the ballot the language for city manager, and you and I had served on committees in the past recommending that El Paso take a real hard look at doing this, and it never got anywhere. Secondly, we wanted to go to staggered terms, which was just as important. You know, you can't elect a new mayor and council every 2 years. Number one, you're just getting caught up in 2 years. You're just figuring it out. And then secondly, you know, city staff at the time was responsible or answered to the mayor and council, and is like a revolving door. You know, you're just getting set on some initiatives, and a whole new sheriff comes to town and says, we're not doing that anymore. So we have 6,000 employees in the city of El Paso. This is not a small little government anymore. So the council manager form of government, as well as the staggered terms for mayor and council, 4-year terms, and a really simplified $109 million bond issue that was split evenly between the districts for some very needed, necessary items in each area, were successful. And a lot of it goes to credit goes to the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce and its members for helping us get the message out.
Thank you. Well, moving on now, one of the more controversial discussions that have occurred, or series of discussions, relates to the next proposed charter amendment. This reflects on the city attorney's classification and reporting structure. Would you please explain to our listening audience what this means and what the ramifications may be as a result of that?
Well, right now the city attorney reports to the mayor, who appoints the city attorney subject to council's approval. She technically reports to the whole mayor and council, but more to the mayor right now, because basically the mayor nominates individuals and representatives could nominate for the mayor's consideration. But look, the client for the city attorney's office is the council, of which the mayor is a member. The city attorney is hired by the council. The city manager, should not the city attorney also be hired by the council? And this was a topic of discussion when we put the city manager or the council manager form of government on the ballot. I look at this one to our constituents as unfinished business. It's basically the same language as being proposed for the hiring of the city attorney. The best qualified and experienced applicants will be presented to the council and the mayor just like they were for city manager. Now, don't get me wrong, this doesn't discount our current city attorney or anybody that served in that office. But we're a big city now. We want transparency in government. Anybody should be able to apply whether they know the mayor or they think they have the votes lined up on council to become a city attorney. And it doesn't necessarily need to be someone that is in the city attorney's office. So I can tell you that this is a good item. There was a lot of discussion on this also, but we had a lot of members of the public thought this was a good idea. Basically, what we're proposing, that the language in the charter for the hiring of the city attorney almost mirrors the hiring of the city manager, with a few changes because of the legal classification. And it also allows the city attorney to hire the assistant city attorneys without the approval of council. Today, city council has to approve the hiring of assistant city attorneys. If we hire he or she as a city attorney, she ought to be able to hire her staff as long as it's within the budget. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what this amendment proposes.
Well, I thank you for that clarification. And I guess I need to at least go on record to say that this is the only single one of the amendments that are being proposed where our board leadership felt a little bit of heartburn and ultimately chose not to support this initiative. And one of the reasons I think that this was discussed at such length is that there's a reality that connects the mayor's office with the city attorney's position. And the reality is that irrespective of who that person happens to be who is chosen by the mayor, council ultimately has to give approval for that appointment anyway. And if there is an issue with performance, then any member of council can raise the issue with the mayor and address the issue in executive session because it becomes a personnel issue. What do you say to the argument that has been made that by leaving it in its current structure, having the city attorney be reporting directly to the mayor, that it ensures a balance of power?
Well, with all due respect to the chamber's position, You know, we're never going to agree on everything, but I can tell you that she really doesn't report to the mayor. You know, the mayor proposes candidates. She probably has more interaction with the mayor. And the mayor can't block a council representative from access to the city attorney. But I think it needs to be more open and transparent in the city charter on that relationship as we grow as a city, so that it's never perceived that whomever serves in that position is somebody that has votes lined up with the council, or is the mayor's pick and he has the votes lined up, he or she has the votes lined up for that candidate. It ought to be the best available candidate with the best experience, and anyone could apply. That's not really the way it works today.
I disagree with you there.
But I do respect the chamber's position. I understand it, and at least it's in the dialogue.
May I ask you another question related to this, and then we'll move on to the next amendments? But the other argument on this issue has been that if we go forward and the voters approve this particular change, this amendment, that it places whoever the person is that sits in the seat as city attorney in the unenviable position of worrying about the politics of council and having to effectively politic with the members of council that they currently don't necessarily have to do today, that they have to be constantly concerned about their job security if they're not able to be more direct in their delivery of the message from a legal perspective versus having to, if you will, assuage them to some extent by applying politics to any communication with the members of council.
Today, the city council could vote to remove the city attorney. There's nothing to prevent that now. The mayor right now proposes candidates to the council for approval. She does not report to the mayor. The mayor does not hire the city attorney. She works for the mayor and council. Today, he or she is subject at any time. If the council feels that they are not getting proper legal advice, they can take action to fire her. The mayor could probably override that decision. But I understand where you're coming from on this, Richard, but I think there's a little bit of a gray area there. But I do respect the position of the chamber on this.
Thank you, Joe. So the next item is related to the actions related, and this is kind of complex. Proposed amendments would allow city council to convey, lease, or grant franchises of city property, make amendments to administrative code provisions, and restructure city departments, or authorize real property conveyances by resolution. Currently, council can do so only by ordinance. That's another mouthful.
Well, let's simplify it. Right now, to accomplish any of these actions, okay, leases, real property conveyances, changes in administrative code, it has to be by ordinance. And state law doesn't require that. Our charter does. Okay, and why do we want to change that? Well, an ordinance has to be introduced first, and then there has to go another 2 weeks, and then it goes for discussion. So the process is prolonged. All this is asking the voters to approve is that the council can take these actions through resolution. Okay, in other words, they're still going to vote on these issues. We just don't have this mired down, antiquated process to introduce everything as an ordinance. It's very cumbersome, creates a tremendous amount of work for staff and the city attorney's office to create ordinances for simple items that the state says you can do by resolution. Let's do what the state says we need to do. Let's do what's in line with what other cities do. That's all we're asking for the voters to approve here.
Thank you. And actually, this goes back to our conversation in our last show. And you made a comment that in our next show, we would touch on some things that will, as we were talking about the frequency of city council meetings and how to expedite processes. And as I made a note here, I'll read something directly from the chamber's resolution of support for this. Giving city council the freedom to act through resolution allows for more swift action, and it also declutters meeting agendas. I think that's an important thing. Is this the one you were referring to?
Absolutely. Declutters meeting agendas and frees up staff time to work on other city business. You know, that's the part of this. This is about bringing efficiency, more efficiency to city government. I can tell you that Tommy Gonzalez, our city manager, Nancy Bartlett, the chief performance officer, have recommended and help for looking at ways to increase the efficiency of city government. That's why we hired them. We're letting them do their job, and hopefully citizens of El Paso understand the importance of these changes that will help us be more effective and efficient as a city.
Thank you. The next one, this is, I believe, Amendment Number 7, and this one specifically refers to, and I think this is a critically important one, on the change of the start date of the fiscal year for the city to move from the current September 1 to October 1. And would you care to cover that and explain to the listening audience why this is so important?
This one's real simple. Right now, if you own a business, how can you prepare a budget if you don't know what your revenues are going to be? Okay? So what happens is in the city government, they do all this work, and it's a lot of work. We have $700 million worth of items in our city budget. It is a huge task. Numerous departments, you know, our public safety and our solid waste disposal take up the lion's share, but there's over 6,000 employees in the city of El Paso, and there's a lot of services that we take for granted. It's a lot of work. You know, we've got all kinds of changes and changes in electricity and fuel costs and everything else. What happens is, up until the last minute, we don't get from the Central Appraisal District what the projected revenues are going to be. So all this could be for naught. They can put a budget together, and then they won't even give you a guesstimate of what those revenues are. By changing the start of the fiscal year from September 1 to October 1, it's going to give them 30 more days in which they get the numbers from the Central Appraisal District, and they can begin the work of closing the gap efficiently and not haphazardly. And I'm not saying they do it haphazardly, but in a rush, to be able to balance those two numbers.
And begin the year, the fiscal year,
right,
on September 1.
And it only requires, there's 1 year that we'd have a 13-month budget. And this is a housekeeping issue.
Well, I think this is really important for the voters to understand, because you raise a valid point. By the way, again, one of those moments when if this were a TV show and you asked the audience to raise their hands, who is satisfied with the current situation as it relates to budgetary constraints and accurate appraisals? And everyone would raise their hand and say, I have a concern. Right now, the resident or the business owner has a concern for a different reason. They don't like their taxes going up. Who does, right? But related to that, and I think you make a very valid point, how can you possibly plan your budget if you don't know what that number is going to be? And we've had situations, unfortunately, often, almost annually, where the projected number doesn't match the actual number. And here we go with a budget we're about to approve, and we find out at the 11th hour, 59th minute, that in fact that number is going to be altered downward. So you have to make additional adjustments to the budget so we aren't facing a situation, because we have a deadline that a lot of people don't realize. Once that deadline passes, we as a city council cannot go back out and say, we're going to now raise the tax rate. You've missed the deadline.
That's right.
It's
by
done.
Law.
And so with this new change, the only obstacle we'll face, and we hope the voters approve this, is that very first year, we have to cover that delta between September 1 and October 1.
It'd be a 13-month budget for 1 year.
Right.
And I know that the city manager has talked to our bond rating companies and the financial people that rate us, and we're not the first person or first group that has ever faced this dilemma.
Great. Thank you very much. And we're now down to, I feel like we're on the Johnny Carson show, where Karnak is holding up the card, right? And they say, well, this is the last card, but this is the last amendment. And this one relates to the city's requirements for submitting the budget in line with state law. So somewhat related.
You know, this is another thing where I'm going to tell you, our city manager has done a really good job, he and his staff, of looking, okay, what does the state law say the requirements of a city are? And what does our city charter say? So why create more onerous laws that make it more difficult for us to conduct the business of the city? And this is probably one of the classic ones that we need to look at. Let's just comply with state law as most almost all of the other Texas cities do. They probably went through this exercise 15 or 20 years ago that we're going through today. Let's simplify our charter. Let's make it go along with state law. And we make it easier for the public. We make it easier for the staff. We make it easy for the legal community and our citizens to understand, well, if the state says we have to do this, why do we have to do it any differently? So, you know, I asked the members of the public to listen that are listening to your show today. We are really just trying or making a really valid attempt with a lot of proper research and a lot of hard work to simplify our charter, to make it more friendly, user-friendly, and to comply with state law. We don't have to have more onerous laws than what the state requires.
Thank you. And for those of you who are just joining us, I'm Richard Dayoub, and I'm interviewing former Mayor Joe Wardy, who is the chairman of the City Charter Review Committee. And this is where I will give you and the other members of the committee accolades, because you don't get paid to do this. It's out of the love of your own community that you devote, in this particular case, weeks and weeks of your time. And you don't just have the meetings where the community comes in to attend, listen, and offer comment, but you have to prepare for each of those meetings. And the meetings last a few hours each time. And this is really sort of, you know, I don't mean to downplay it in any way, but it's almost like God's work. If you're not committed to the community, it's hard to participate in such a process because it's laborious, it's time-consuming, and then you have the process of debate with audience members, with community members who many times have very strong feelings about these particular issues and want to challenge you and the other members of the committee on the recommendations that you might be making, not to mention even offering, in some cases, amendments that are not even under your assigned purview, right?
Yeah,
we had a couple of those.
We had a couple of those.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm proud of our citizens. I can tell you the 68 citizens that signed up to speak, and there were more than 68, but the people that we have record of, make you proud to be a citizen of El Paso. They were very eloquent. They made good points. And, you know, I went to school when civics, government was called civics, and this is government of the people, for the people, and by the people. So we were all ears. The committee wanted to hear what citizens had to say, and a lot of times it helped us tremendously when we were trying to formulate our viewpoints on these issues. So it was a great exercise all the way around, Richard.
Well, I really want to take this opportunity for everyone who's listening to the show to know how much the entire community should appreciate all the work that you and the other members of the Charter Review Committee did for this community. It's a sacrifice, and we deeply appreciate it. For those of you who have perhaps did not get to hear the first show where I interviewed former Mayor Wardy on the first three of the eight charter amendments, as well as this show, if you happen to tune in late, that you can go to the website, ktep.org, and go to the archives and pull up the show and listen to it. And the good thing about doing that is you're able to fast forward through my comments and just listen to former Mayor Wardy. All kidding aside, there's another aspect to this that's critically important, and I know that Joe Wardy and I share this passion, and that is the issue of voter turnout, how critically important it is for this nation and certainly for this community. We, unfortunately, historically, are underrepresented by our voters. And if you look at the population who are registered voters and the number who show up, sadly, we fluctuate anywhere from a very, very low end. As an example, a school board election, it's not uncommon for us to have 2 and 3% voter turnout. That's abysmal. And even for major elections, national elections, we historically do well, we think we do well, and we end up with 18 or 20% voter turnout. And it's really important for all of you who are listening to please consider getting out to vote. And these are some important dates for you to note. Early voting this fall begins October the 19th, Monday, October the 19th for early voting. And it will run through until just the week before the actual election. And election day is November the 3rd. So I want to encourage you to get out and vote and encourage your friends and the students at UTEP, many of whom are now of voting age, to get out, make a difference by showing up at the voter registration tables, get registered, and get out and vote. Mayor Wardy, if you have some closing comments.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I can tell you that I was intrigued. Some of the city council members of their community meetings asked me to come and sit down and have the same discussion that we're having with different groups of people, varied groups of interest in the community. I echo your comments. I can tell you that we need to encourage our friends and put pressure on people in our circles to vote. It's very important, especially when we face the issues as a community that we do going forward. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Thank you for being on the show. And one last point to Mayor Wardy's comment. Read up on the information that you're voting on. Read up on the candidates that are running. Read up on the amendments and make the decisions for yourselves. But be informed when you show up to vote. And again, thank you all very much for listening to our show. Joe, thank you. And this is the end of the afternoon. Have a great day.
You too, Richard. Thanks a lot.